This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. There's nothing like Halloween to separate the fear junkies from the fear phobes. What's a fear junkie? Bill Cosby knows.
And I love to get scared to death. Anything that scared me to death, I loved it. I loved Frankenstein, a Wolfman, and a mummy so much. I used to sit right up front. And then they would come at me and I would squish myself under into the orchestra pit.
That's from Cosby's 1966 classic Chicken Heart routine. The fear junkies are the ones lined up outside the haunted house, eager to spend their Friday night with zombies, possessed children, creepy clowns. Like Bill, they yell, "Scare me, go ahead, scare me." The fear phobes, on the other hand, are the ones waiting back in the car, you know, wondering, "Oh my, why would anyone want to scare themselves silly?" Well, they aren't all the only ones wondering. This Halloween, two scientists have teamed up to find out what we love about a good scare. And to do it, they set up shop at, where else, a haunted house. Let me introduce them. Margie Kerr is the sociologist and resident at Scare House. She's also an adjunct teacher instructor at Robert Morris University and the University of Pittsburgh. Welcome to Science Friday.
Glad to be here. Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween to you. Greg Siegel is a neuroscientist and associate professor of psychiatry at the University of Pittsburgh School of Medicine. Happy Halloween to you.
Happy Halloween, Ira.
Happy. Margie, tell us how do you become a sociologist in residence at a haunted house?
Well, I'm very lucky. In 2008, I was working on my dissertation. I have a background working in research on health disparities, so looking at fear from a very different point of view. And I was extremely just stressed out, looking for something fun to do. I loved haunted houses. I went to Scare House, and I asked the owner, I said, "What can I do to be more involved?" And he handed over the data set for all of their customer survey responses. So I got to read about what customers thought was scary and why they thought it was scary. So it was great, and it completely took my research agenda in a new direction.
So you look those people up and you observe them, you talk to them before they went through the Scare House and then afterwards.
Well, that's what we're doing now. Yeah. So, today it's very different than what I started by just watching people from behind the walls and observing them on my own. Now we have a real IRB approved protocol to study the impact of haunted houses.
Mm-hmm. And you find out what makes them scared when they go through.
Well, that's not exactly the purpose of the study. The study is really meant to measure people before they go in to get an idea of where their anxiety levels are, what they're feeling before and then after, so that we can see what kind of impact these types of scares are having on people.
Mm-hmm. Greg, how did the idea come to you to study a scare house and get involved with Margie?
Well, treatments for mental health in this country generally are associated with decreasing emotion, pills that help to decrease emotion, therapies that help to teach you to down-manage emotion. And when Margie was writing a book and she wanted to know something about the neuroscience of fear, she came to me and asked me about fear experiences. We started talking about her work with Scare House, and she said people would go through the Scare House and feel exhilarated. They would feel terrific afterward. And this is not consistent with the way we in psychiatry think of helping people to feel better.
Mm.
So we decided to say, why aren't we capitalizing on this effect? How do we understand it? Why are people feeling so happy when they get out of a scare house? And how could we maybe start translating that into mental health intervention?
So you actually scan people's brains before and after they go through the scare house?
That's right. We bring them down to our lab, which is an industrial bathtub in the basement, and we have a whole bunch of computers there, an electroencephalography, or EEG. We hook everybody up to it, usually in pairs, and they do a bunch of cognitive tasks, go through mm-hmm. Scare House, come back, and do it again.
And Margie, when you observe people going through the Scare House, what do you notice about them?
Well, I noticed that most people, they'll scream, but then they'll immediately start laughing. So it's really showing that that ability of ours to recognize almost instantly that we're in a safe place and that we can, you know, transition from being afraid to being happy and excited very quickly. And yeah, I watch people go through, they're screaming, they're laughing, and then they come out the other side and they're giving each other high fives, hugs. You really see a lot of social bonding happening inside and outside. And not just haunted houses, but roller coasters, you know, all of these things that get our arousal system going can be really beneficial. It can create, you know, just really good memories when it's a scary material that we are choosing to engage with, and just bring a lot of fun.
Our number 844-724-8255. If you'd like to talk about being scared, maybe you like to get scared and maybe you hate being scared. Tell us why. 844-724-8255. You can also tweet us at SciFry, SCIFRI. You mentioned roller coasters and you mentioned haunted house in the same breath. Are they the same kind of scare? Do you get the same? I know when I go up in, I'll go into a haunted house, but I'm a little more, you know, worrisome when I go up in a roller coaster. Is it the same kind of scare that I'm getting or something different, Margie?
Well, it can be. So the threat response can be the same under both circumstances. But in a haunted house, you're also going to have lots of other triggers, other kinds of scares that may take a little bit longer to sort of, you know, sink into what you are remembering about any kind of different situation that a haunted house may put you in. So it's not as much as a physical thrill, whereas a roller coaster lasting for 2 minutes is all just your complete kind of lizard brain going into action and feeling all of the great chemicals. Mm-hmm. But in a haunted house, when you're there for an extended period of time, you've got a lot more time to think about where you are and the storyline and maybe dig in a little bit deeper psychologically.
Greg, do we know what's going on in your brain when you're on a roller coaster or scary situation?
We know a bunch about what's going on in scary situations. We haven't done so much measurement of people on roller coasters yet. But with scary situations, at least, as Margie said, a lot of the lizard brain turns on, the very oldest parts of our brain that say something scary is around. One of the differences, that, as you were saying, between haunted houses and roller coasters is that haunted houses also capitalize on a very old brain system in the cerebellum that computes differences between what we expect and what's actually happening, so our errors. And those errors in our predictions really give us pause. So, for example, you can't tickle yourself because you know what's coming. When someone else tickles you, you have a big reaction because of the unexpected element. And that's the cerebellum computing these differences and saying, oh, what's going on? In the haunted house, that's all around you.
Yeah, but you know you're going to be scared in a haunted house. You know you're going to be scared on a roller coaster. Yet you get scared, unlike you won't laugh when you know that the laugh, you know, you're being tickled. What's the difference there?
So you know that you're going to be scared. You don't know how or why. It turns out that the fear centers in our brain, areas like the amygdala, respond a lot to the whites of eyes. So you know somebody is scared. You know there's something that there's to be scared about, but you don't know what. That's exactly when our fear systems kick in and make us very vigilant and make us very reactive to anything that comes next, a pin dropping you might jump at, because you're primed for these scary events.
Margie, any hypothesis about what fear does for us? Why we love to scare ourselves? Why we go on these things?
Yeah, I think that, you know, aside from the chemical reactions and, you know, the dopamine and the endorphins that are blocking our pain receptors, there's a real self-esteem boost that can come from doing these safe, scary experiences. You know, even though our brain may know that we're not really fighting a horde of zombies, we're still going to feel like we did successfully overcome a fear or overcome a challenge, and that we really did conquer the beast, so to speak. So it gives us a feeling of confidence, and I think it also really builds this sense of resilience. You know, each time you can overcome a threatening situation and be okay, make it out on the other side, you're building a sense of confidence and resilience in yourself so that when you do face a real threatening situation, you're going to be able to know that you can survive, that you'll be all right.
It says, are you saying that you should use sort of scare therapy then if you need confidence and to build your confidence?
I think so. That's at least what I'd like to, you know, hopefully show working with Greg and kind of digging into this further to show that we can use these experiences as sort of training wheels for real threats and just to build that sense of confidence in ourselves.
Greg, is there anything you can share about your results so far when you've monitored these people going through the scare house?
Yeah, so the experiment is not done yet, so I can't tell you anything conclusive, and certainly we haven't published, but I can give you one general sense, which is that a lot of the mental chatter that people have going on all the time seems to be decreasing after the scare house. If we ask people to just sit there, a lot of alpha brainwaves, these brain signals that are associated with brain idling and being able to just sit there, they increase. If we show them low arousal, positive emotion, they can sort of relax into that and not have their usual chatter. So that could actually be one other reason people really enjoy these scary experiences. It as one friend says, it drugs the hamster and allows you to just sit with your experiences.
Well, then why are some people so, you know, wonderful at being scared? They seek it out, and then people are sitting in the car waiting for you to finish your ride or the haunted house.
So there are a couple of reasons that we could point to. One is different people seem to have different thresholds for arousal. So back in 1925, they showed that if you're extremely aroused and scared as a person, you won't perform well. If you have very, very low arousal, you won't perform well. You need sort of a requisite level of arousal. And different people's thresholds is different. We've gotten clues from genetics recently. There's a gene that governs how we use serotonin, the serotonin transporter allele. One variant of this gene, people with that variant seem to be very harm avoidant. And people with a different variant of that allele seem to actually not be harm avoidant and will often put themselves in scarier situations.
Let's go to the phones. Scott in Pensacola, Florida. Hi, Scott. Welcome to Science Friday.
How you doing?
Hey there.
So I wanted to just mention, I'm really interested in this conversation because I'm one of those people that just loves being scared all the time, as much as I can. I have a phobia of heights, so I love jumping off of cliffs and skydiving and stuff like that. And I'm curious as to, like, to what y'all just said about it being a possibility of a way to deal with a therapy. Does it seem like a healthy type of therapy to use to build confidence? I also, you know, suffered from depression and self-loathing and stuff like that over the years. And the best times I ever have are falling from the sky, you know.
Do you skydive?
I do. I skydive, and I love, you know, rock climbing and, like I said, cliff diving. And
even though you're scared stiff of it.
I mean, absolutely scared stiff. But, you know, we've got to – I'm from Florida. We've got a bunch of tall bridges, and a lot of times we'll take a boat out. It's totally illegal, but we'll take a boat out and climb the levels, the work platforms underneath these bridges, and jump off of them into the water. And there's times I might get to one of these levels, and there's just no way I can jump, and finally I'll jump. Yeah. And then there's other times where I just, yeah, I'm petrified and I go. And it's, but it, you know, as soon as you jump off, it's the greatest feeling ever, you know.
And Margie, sound familiar? Is this good, good therapy for him? I mean, not the illegal part, but, you know.
I don't know if I can say if it's good or if it's bad. I can definitely relate to it. You know, I think that a lot of us who like that kind of thrill seeking, you know, definitely are finding it to be useful and effective to, I don't know, just help us deal with anxiety or depression. If it's the best alternative, I think that that's what we need to keep studying and looking at how we can do it in a safe, effective way. Yeah, I mean, and I suppose it is a lot better than alternatives out there.
Scott, what are you going to do for to scare yourself today?
Oh, today I have a lot of things that I have to do today, so I don't think I'm going to get to scare myself today, but I'm hoping maybe something happened later, it being Halloween. That's the other point I was going to make, is that things like haunted houses and scary movies are always a big disappointment, you know, because you get kind of worked up like, I hope they get me good this time, and they just never, ever do. But fun, you know, the other side of that is that I've been – I was watching The Walking Dead.
I got to interrupt you for a second, Scott, and remind everybody
sure.
that – this is Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International. Walking Dead, big for you?
Watching The Walking Dead. I'm actually watching old seasons right now, getting back into it. But I was sitting in my room the other night, the lights off, it was 10 o'clock at night, and I'm watching it, and something, I don't even remember what it was, happened, but a thought went through my head, and I looked to my window, and all of a sudden my heart rate went up, and I felt scared for a few minutes, and I just, I just sat there reveling in it. It was increased heart rate and fear and tension that went on for a few minutes, and then it faded off, and and I sat there enjoying the moment for a moment.
Well, wishing you more scary moments today, Scott. Thanks for calling us. Margie, a satisfied customer, so to speak.
Yeah.
Greg, what do you think about him? Is he getting an adrenaline rush in addition to just the scary part in his brain?
This absolutely could be happening. And again, this idea that if we're constantly in this culture being cognitive beings, being able to take that offline for just a little bit is often a wonderful feeling. The limbic parts of our brain, our lizard brain, when it becomes active, does take over and does stop us from using the parts of our brain that are balancing our checkbooks and worrying about the next thing that in a more cognitive way. The other thing I should say is that our culture really focuses on people whose emotions are too high. And there's a whole group of people who go through life more numb, more seeking some level of emotion. And sure, we don't have a lot for those people except to say, go scare the heck out of yourself or jump out of a plane. And maybe that is a perfectly good thing.
Margaret, did the different cultures find different things scary?
Well, there are some universal ways to trigger the threat response, but looking at it from a more cultural sociological perspective, you do see different trends in iconic monsters across cultures. When I was in Japan, I saw that a lot of the traditional Japanese haunts relied more on stories of ghosts of often family members, relatives, and there was less gore, less blood, less, fewer zombie type monsters and more ghostly type monsters. So I noticed that. And then in South America, in Bogota, they don't have a tremendous haunted house industry at all. And they don't have a lot of scary movies that do very well on the ratings that are produced in Colombia. A lot of the TV shows that are in the horror genre don't do as well. So I've been looking at that connection between, the risk of actual threat and engagement with scary material.
All right, we're going to have to leave it there. Maybe we'll pick it up next year. Happy Halloween to both of you.
Margie Kerr. Thank you. Happy Halloween.
Jared Siegel.
Thanks very much.
You're welcome. We'll be right back after this break.